Crime Obscene is a monthly true crime podcast. Listener discretion is advised. Lori Lynn left her home of Ravenna, Ohio, United States, on the morning of August 1st, 2017. She was to pick up her mother, Wanda Pullen, in Liberty Township to take her to the Trumbull County Courthouse to fill some property records. Along the way, Lori placed several calls to her mother, but failed to reach her. Cameras fitted to her mother's residence show Lori arrive at 11:02 a.m. and enter, looking for her mother. She exits at 11:36 a.m. after finding Wanda not home, and makes her way back to her vehicle, and is seen leaving the residence, driving back towards the road, out of view of the cameras. This is the last confirmed sighting of Lori. By the evening, Lori's absence is very much noticed, and soon frantic phone calls are placed to her phone by worried family members, and will continue well into the morning. The next morning, two family members find Lori's brand new 2017 Nissan Pathfinder parked in a garbage pile behind the barn of Wanda Pullen's property. This was followed by the discovery that the tractor and brush hog used to tend the grass was missing. The two family members followed the trail of mowed grass until they came across the tractor in one of the ponds. Lori was on the tractor with her face submerged in the pond. An initial investigation by Liberty Township Police Department ruled the death a farm accident, which began a near four-long agonizing fight by Lori's family, who insisted the retired heavy machine operator, 60-year-old, had not died by accident, but in fact was the victim of foul play, claims sadly falling on deaf ears. Initial missteps, an early investigation, and a too-quick-to-rule accident put a significant hamper on getting to the bottom of Lori Lynn's death and allowing a cold-blooded killer to get away with homicide. Today, we explore the tragic and untimely death of Lori Lynn. Hello. Welcome to Crime Obscene. I'm your host, Aaron. Before we begin, I would like to tell you a little about the show. Crime Obscene is a monthly true crime podcast that explores unsolved murders, missing persons cases, and beyond. This podcast is run by me and me alone, so your listenership and feedback is greatly appreciated. So why not give me a follow on your favourite podcatcher, a like, and review. This greatly helps out the pod. If you have any feedback, a case suggestion, or just want to drop me a line, you can do so by emailing me at crimeobscene@outlook.com, tweet me at crimeobscenepod, or on Instagram by the same name. There is also a private Facebook group set up where you can discuss your thoughts on episodes, recommend to other pods, or just be part of community who want to make a difference. That's Crime Obscene Investigators. As a side note, I would just like to apologise for my absence. There were some technical issues inhibiting me from getting another full-form episode out, but all is sorted, and I am in earnest to continue releasing new episodes in schedule. Now, let's begin. Chapter 1. Crime Timeline. Lorraine, or Lori Lynn, to her loved ones, was born on April 25th, 1957, to Wanda Jean McCormick Pullen and Howard J. Pullen, Jr. She attended Liberty High School in Liberty Township, Ohio, and graduated in June 1975. Initially, Lori worked as a bookkeeper and even considered a career of accounting and attended Youngstown State University in steps to achieving this. However, she would make the decision to operate heavy equipment and worked for 30 years as a heavy machine operator for Workers' Local Union 66. This led to the last 5 years before her retirement, doing work for oil companies that entailed a long commute, which ultimately led to her retirement. During her career, Laurie made friends at Shelley & Sons, a highway construction firm, and where she met her fiancé. The work Laurie engaged in was hard. She had to dig holes, ditches, put in drainage systems, and her work also involved dealing with hazardous materials. Despite her gender norm-breaking career, Laurie was considered among her work peers as equals, being viewed as one of the guys. They all joked around and would engage in camaraderie with no question that Laurie was just as capable as any of the men in the field. This motivation and self-driven attitude followed her wherever she went and led to a fulfilled career. On top of this, Laurie was a devoted mother to 2 daughters she had in her first marriage with Tim. With working so hard, Laurie never neglected to make time for her 2 daughters. Samantha Lynn recalled many of a night after work, Laurie would come to her softball practices, homecomings, proms, never missing a beat, and eventually, when grandchildren came into the equation, their nana would travel 2 hours each way to spend time with them. Laurie's second daughter, Corinne, could always talk with her mother up front with everything, and Laurie listened, even if they disagreed on different issues, such as religion or politics. She never shied away from a positive debate. She was the kind of person that even would say, just let it go, despite knowing her daughters won't do that. Her first year of retirement was a model of how she lived the majority of her life, but with a little more time to let her hair down. Not only did Laurie operate heavy machines, she was also quite handy about the house, and even beyond the usual painting and decorating, she could get her hands on with even fitting light fixtures. She made time for all her loved ones, had card nights and wine with neighbours, went on a cruise to Canada with her parents, and before her parents passed away, Laurie and her sister spent the week in Ireland with her parents and had a view for many more holidays in the future. Sadly, everything changed forever and turned the world on its head on the morning of Tuesday, August 1st, 2017. Laurie had plans to take her mother into the Trumbull County Courthouse in order to file property records. Laurie left her home after 10 and made a drive from her home in Rovina to her mother's house 45 minutes later. Surveillance at Wanda's residence set up by Chip Pullen, Wanda's son, shows Laurie arrive at the residence, pull up and park in the driveway, get out of the car, walk up and let herself in. She remains inside for a period of time before exiting as Wanda was not home, and this is the last confirmed sighting of Laurie as she pulls out of the driveway back towards the road. It would be worth noting here that the area in which Wanda lived was a rather rural area with a barn, a field, and 2 paths of entry into and from the premises, and it was about 40 acres in size. Laurie was seen travelling in on the main road when first arriving, a road compacted and drivable to allow access to the property, whereas the second road was much rockier with undergrowth and trees to avoid. This road in particular bypassed the view of the surveillance cameras on the property. It was down this second road that Laurie's brand new 2017 Nissan Pathfinder is observed returning a half an hour later, treading grass and potential damage from rocks to the underside of the car. The Nissan had been bought brand new that year as a treat to herself after retiring, and had also been just washed that day in question. The route the car is seen taking on CCTV is also out of character for Laurie, as during the summer she would park under the shade of a large tree in view of the house, so Wanda was aware when Laurie arrived. After surveillance sees the car return, it is not seen leave, so as the day wears on and turns to evening, frantic calls were made to attempt to reach Laurie, and continued into the morning. Chip Cullen received a call from his mother at 7 a.m. on August 2nd, saying police had been to her home looking for his sister, and since Chip lived close by, he comes over straight away. Tim Lynn, Laurie's ex-husband, is already there when he arrives, and after he had received a call from his and Laurie's daughter at 4 a.m. saying that Laurie had not come home that evening, he decided to leave and was there before 7 a.m. Ultimately, Chip and Tim Lynn decide to head out to the farm, where it was known she was last seen, to begin the search. The two had found the car rather quickly. It had morning dew present on it, indicative of spending the night there. The placement of the car, however, led to more questions than answers. The Pathfinder was parked upon an area which had long since been used to burn scrap, and despite being overgrown, had still the presence of old nails, metal, and glass on it, which would risk further damage to the car. As odd as the parking choice, no trace of Laurie could be seen, so the two searched on. It wouldn't be long before the two noticed that the tractor and the bush hog were missing. There was an obvious trail of grass which had been mowed, so they followed it and found the tractor. It was in one of the ponds on the property, and there on the tractor was Laurie, her face submerged in the water. As the two men frantically surveyed the scene, Chip, who was further back to Tim, raced away to flag down first responders when Tim called them, as he was the only one with a cell phone. Tim is alleged to have gotten the best look at Laurie's condition, as he had spotted Laurie's leg, but Chip had stopped him from going on any further, as to not disturb anything. Tim briefly explained in the forensic engineering report the positioning of Laurie's body. He had seen Laurie sitting in the tractor seat, with her right leg positioned behind her. The top part of her torso was draped forward onto the steering wheel and partially submerged. The lower part of her body was out of the water, but positioned in the seat. There is a slight discrepancy in Chip's recollection versus Tim's. When asked why there was a discrepancy, Tim had no explanation and was adamant that his was correct because he went down into the pond and saw Laurie's position. Chapter 2. There is no way Laurie could have driven that tractor into the family pond. Absolutely no way. Friends and co-workers of Laurie have all stated emphatically how infeasible it was that Laurie, an experienced heavy machines operator for more than 30 years, could have done a one loop of cutting grass on a tractor and bush hog and somehow drive into a pond and drowned. One has to only read the forensic engineering report that is available on the family's website, Who Killed Laurie Lynn, which, as a side note, is filled with evidence, pictures, police report, and is a really invaluable source of information regarding this case, to see how every attempt was made in establishing if any technical fault from the tractor had led to Laurie's untimely demise. During the days of Tuesday the 8th and Wednesday the 9th of August 2017, a pump was used in the pond in order to gain access to the submerged front of the tractor. During inspection, it could be determined the gear shifter was in the neutral position and the speed selector was high. The key switch was in the run position, and the throttle was set to half speed, and the PTO, or power takeoff shaft, was engaged. All these findings suggest the tractor was running normally prior to the incident. The model of the tractor was a 1978 Ford 2000 manufactured in 1978, though a vintage model, when pulled from the pond and cleaned carefully with fresh water and a brush to remove the mud and weeds, the tires were observed to be intact, mounted correctly, and fully inflated. There was no sign of tire damage other than some cosmetic cuts to the treads, but that was typical of a model that vintage and from use. The steer linkages, steering column, ball and socket joints were all intact and worked. As of this, no steering problems could be seen. The engine was not started due to being submerged. The brakes worked fine and had solid pedals for both rear tires. The brake lineages and fitting were tight, and no missing pieces could be identified. The gear selector was easily moved from a gear into neutral. The seat was on and sturdy, but the model of the tractor had no back support or seat belt. In order to see if there was any missing pieces of the tractor over the path of grass, a large magnet was also used to locate, if any. Nothing of significance was found. Even beyond the report's findings, it is also stated in the interview segment, when Chip, Laurie's brother, is interviewed, he states he had only taken the tractor out of the barn 2 days prior, filled it with gas, and checked to see if it was working fine, then parked it near the storage shed, so this is how he noticed it was missing when initially searching for Laurie. He also said the tractor had been serviced twice that year by Cortland Tractor. It has also been stated by Lori's daughter, Samantha, that as the farm was so big, the amount of time it would have taken Lori to cut the grass was 3 hours at least. So it begs the question, why on a day where Lori had prior plans to bring her mother to the local courthouse, would she decide to start a job that would take this long? Even as a time-wasting task, it does not make much sense. It would have been at this juncture, or even before, in the evidence segment of this podcast, I would relay the findings of the Liberty Police to you. But unfortunately, even after reading their police report, there is very little information. It was believed by them, right from the get-go, this was an accident, so their supplemental reports showcase this very much, with a mere paragraph detailing their response to the scene. From the forensic engineering report, and this alone, it rules out mechanical error. The only two conclusions one can raise is either 1. Human error, or 2. Staged scene and homicide. And after outlining Lori Lynn's extensive career in operating these kinds of machines, how adept she was in not only operating them, but also construction itself, I learned through the website as well that Lori helped build the pond she was found in. Even the most skeptical mind has to entertain this was more than a simple accident. So why would someone do this? Who could have the motive and opportunity? One thing remains certain. There is no way Lori could have driven the tractor into the family pond. Absolutely not. Chapter 3. Missteps and Missed Evidence. Liberty Police seemed offhanded in the initial stages of the handling of Lori's case. A mere 2 hours of legwork was involved, which seems even to the layperson extremely short. Even if a scene looks a certain way, investigators need to rule it out, double or even triple search the area, verify accounts on witnesses, look into phone records, and this was 2017. The likelihood of households, even in the countryside, having surveillance is higher. So to inquire about surveillance would have been a tremendous move early on in the investigation. The evidence gathering was slight. The usual vision of the CSI techs covered head to toe in white did not occur here. The Nissan Pathfinder was not processed for fingerprints or DNA. Even something as subtle as checking the position of the driver's seat wasn't done, which might have indicated who else other than Lori could have driven the car. Nothing else was done to definitely rule out the potential of foul play, and it was only as Wanda Pullen surveyed the CCTV footage at the residence and seeing the Pathfinder return, but this time using the circuitous road out of camera's view, did any real police interest spark. Family have stated that only a handful of people knew the location of the cameras and to avoid them. Interestingly, the tractor was scrapped 3 weeks after Lori was found by Chip. A lot of questions have been raised over this and other incidents surrounding Chip. On who killed Lori in the blog section while discussing the tractor, it is stated by the author, quote, "The small Ford farm tractor was in working order and had no malfunctions. My mother's brother, Chip, had the tractor scrapped for a few hundred dollars at a local scrapyard about 3 weeks after finding my mother's body. Why did he scrap the tractor? Also, the tractor does not officially belong to anyone but my grandmother, so if anyone had the right to sell it, it was her. These questions are yet to be answered by Chip." So clearly some issues are raised by these factors. A polygraph has been put to Chip, who had before refused, but agreed to do one if others did the same. Lori's daughter, Samantha, did take a polygraph, along with 2 others, which was administered by a well-known attorney and polygraph expert, William Evans. But at the time of making this podcast, I have been unable to find anything on whether Chip scheduled or indeed took a polygraph yet. Chip has maintained his innocence, and said he has nothing to do with the death, and of course no official charges have been placed on him or anyone else. The subject matter being discussed here is just facts arisen from research and documents pertaining to investigation. All parties are innocent until proven otherwise in a court of law. Another factor to discuss is the initial ruling of accident, in quotes, perceived by media during the time. Lori, as we know, had been discovered by Chip, an ex-husband, but for whatever reason, Chip had been appointed point of contact for the coroner, Dr. Humphrey Germaniuk. This is claimed due to inability to contact Lori's daughters, though they had access to their phones all the time. However, this was later rectified, so the 2 daughters were placed as POC. Media reported, copious times, that the coroner had, quote, changed his ruling from accidental, end quote. But truthfully, it had never been ruled anything at that point. The chief on the scene, Chief Tyson, had called the coroner and said right there it looked like an accident. And as that was relayed to him, it meant the coroner would not come out to the scene. Thus, potential evidence gathering isn't implemented. The body was found face down in water, but without having an autopsy to determine if there was water in the lungs, how can we be doubly sure it was a drowning or even accidental? This kind of misstep makes this case even more frustrating, common sense seemingly absent. Perhaps, though a blessing in disguise, Dr. Germaninuk never ruled anything, so accidental was never placed on a death certificate, and the only certificate Laurie's daughters received had stated, interestingly, quote, pending investigation and homicide, end quote. In 2018, Dr. Germaninuk does say Laurie died at the hands of someone else, even going as far as saying, quote, the crime scene looked staged, end quote. Theories and conclusions. From the get-go, I have to admit, I lost all impartialness while putting together this episode. With Crime Obscene, I have always tried to stay neutral and look at facts and leave conclusions somewhat open to interpretation. When looking at this case, credit has to go to Laurie Lynn's family, especially Samantha and Corinne, on their large amount of work in gathering evidence, putting together the website, Who Killed Laurie, which has so much content, such as police and forensic reports, pictures of the barn, shade tree to which Laurie would regularly park, the placement of the Nissan Pathfinder, the main road into the house, the circuitous road there, and varying directions to which these roads lead, and so much more. It truly is inspiring and a testament to the love they have for their mother, and shows her work etiquette surely did not fall far from the tree at all. In my own opinion, this has a staged scene all over it. There can be absolutely no question. Laurie grew up on a farm, even described as a tomboy. It is beyond obvious that she was capable of operating a tractor, and even taking for a second the initial police theory that she hit her head on a branch, I do think instinct will kick in and Laurie would have disengaged from the tractor. Of course, people's reactions are different, but something just does not sit right with me that Laurie would continue cutting the field whilst nursing a whack to the head, severe enough to have dazed her to the point she went into the pond. During creating this episode, I corresponded with Samantha Lynn in order to ensure I had as much information correct as possible. Being from the other side of the world, here in Ireland, I really did not want to rely solely on the internet to do research, which isn't always correct. Even backing away from the theory, and just surveying the oddness around her, even deciding to cut the field, which Samantha told me was a good 3 hours of cutting, how likely is it that Laurie would start cutting, even with the knowledge that she had a prior engagement with her mother to go to the courthouse? Laurie wasn't exactly dressed up for a night on the town, but she was wearing a nicer pair of sandals and capri jeans. Something about the style and attire just doesn't come across as yard work to me. Of course, I know everyone is different. There are just these factors that niggle in the back of my head and make me wonder what is really going on here. It has also been stated that there is a history of family feuds involved, and that could be the potential for a motive here. As these are my own thoughts, I know some of you listening here will form your own conclusions, but remember, there is Who Killed Laurie, the site, that has all the invaluable information that you can deep dive. There is also a tips section where you can give in tips completely anonymously. There is also a $20,000 reward offered for any information leading to arrest and conviction of Laurie Lynn's killer. Please, don't just submit a tip for the money. Do it for the family. They have been through so much, enduring this hardship for nearly 4 years now. There has to be someone who knows more, and whether they're afraid of the consequences of coming forward or reprisal, just remember, your fear will never equate to the horrible time Laurie's family have been put through. Do the right thing. The time is now. Help give some closure to Laurie and her family.
3 years later, the family is pointing fingers at one of its own. 3 News investigator Rachel Polansky recently returned to the scene of that crime just as siblings collided and more accusations flew. Outside her family home in Liberty Township, Laurie Lynn was raised on tractors. Then she worked in heavy machinery for 30 years.
where she plowed her way through gender norms.
And she loved it. It was a man's job, and she fought her way up the ladder, and she was good at what she did.
But how Lori lived contradicted how she died. Her daughter Samantha recounts the phone call 3 years ago.
You're gonna make me cry already. I just remember collapsing to the ground. It was soul crushing.
Police saw an open and shut case, calling it a tragic accident. Family saw it another way.
There was just so much that wasn't logical and making sense. There's no way she's going to drive a tractor straight into a pond.
7 months later, law enforcement agreed. The coroner said it was not an accident and the pond scene was recreated. Lori had been hit in the head and was likely strangled. The family says clearly the killer was someone she knew.
I've not been able to grieve because of all the allegations.
I don't care.
Lori's brother Chip lives next door to the pond. He admits they fought over money, but he says he was elsewhere the day his sister died. His family wonders why then he hired a criminal defense attorney and stopped talking to police.
The family's saying it would put their mind at ease if you would take a polygraph test. Why don't you want to do that?
Maybe I should, just to get it all over with. But I'm just so pissed off at this time that they're doing this to me. And none of them have taken a polygraph test.
Samantha took the test yesterday. Meanwhile, they've hired former FBI agent Bob Frederick as a private investigator.
Everybody in the family, including myself, think that Lori was murdered. They want to get this thing done, and who killed our sister or our mother?
There's only a handful of people that would know where the cameras are and where they point, how to avoid them. We have had some family history with feuds, and we truly believe that it was someone that knew her.
And we're told Samantha passed that polygraph test she took yesterday. As for Chip, he's yet to take a test despite his promise. For now, this murder mystery awaits an ending, and Lori's family awaits closure.
Last thing that I can do for Lori, you know, your younger sister shouldn't die before you. Lori was fun-loving, liked to joke around, and, you know, she's not here for that now.
Our investigative unit has been working this case tirelessly. There are still some interviews that we're going to be doing. We're committed to bringing a resolution to this family, and we won't stop until we're able to do that.
Could please help us be able to get that closure, to be able to mourn. Because right now it's just an open sore that hurts.
In Liberty Township, Nadine Grimley, WKBN 27 First News.